Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go. Basic summertime, but not as hot. Highs not in the 90s, but knocking on the door. 40% chance for afternoon showers. Highs near 90 through the weekend, and then maybe a little bit of less humidity come Monday, but no real cool fronts yet. The first day of autumn is Sunday, which means it's tradition. You'll hear autumn in New Orleans on Monday morning. David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
I am doing well. In case you're wondering, it's 88 degrees here today.
Really?
We're not getting – so you don't get the cool weather until we get the cool weather, you know, from Canada. It comes down to you. So we're still hot.
Interesting to hear former President Trump say that – and this has nothing to do with former President Trump. This is more about theology, because years ago we had a story where a lady drove her car into the lake and she says her guardian angel saved her. And I wondered at that point – this is 10, 20 years ago – well, okay, but where was the guardian angel to keep the car from going in the lake? You see what I'm saying? You can play that game all day long. And former President Trump saying that God wants him to be president. That's why he saved his life during this. And we've gone from assassination attempt to alleged assassination attempt to attempted assassination. Parse the words however you want. The guy was in the bushes with a gun, and his intent was to shoot former President Donald Trump, but the Secret Service prevented that. But, of course, you could always say, well, if that's the case, then why did God even put that guy there with a rifle? You can play that game all day, right?
Correct, sure. And I don't know about you, but I have no idea what God knows.
I get nervous whenever any president, be it any politician, be it a president or a mayor, Democrat, uh-huh, Republican, claims to have direct communication with God. I don't like that at all. I understand everybody talks to God, and I realize that, but you know, I don't know. It just doesn't sit right when it comes to public policy and those kind of things. But let's not get lost in the weeds on that. Let's talk about the second attempted assassination on former President Trump. Does that help or hurt in the polls? Or I guess it's hard for politicians to survive assassination attempts. So therefore, it's the amount of information that you have is limited as far as whether or not it helps in the polls, right?
You're right. Okay, so after the first assassination attempt...
There's a lot to unpack that, David. Take your time unpacking
that. Yeah, sure. After the first assassination attempt on him, somebody wrote me and said, here's some data to take a look at. And going back to there was a couple of attempts on Gerald Ford back in the 70s, and then there was a couple of other attempts, you know, here and there.
Reagan
like that. What do you make of it like that? And when you looked at the numbers there... with Ford, there was, if I can call it a bump, there was no assassination attempt bumped. With Reagan, very short term and so forth. But for the most part, for the few that we have, and I'll say thankfully, we have very little data, you know, on this, you know, which is good, because we're not hopefully going to be killing a lot of people or have it like that. Doesn't really appear to be any pattern in terms of whether there's a bump or not a bump whatsoever. And again, I'm going to be the first to concede and say we've only got about three or four examples in recent history that we can examine. Too many things are going on in the here, but it does not appear that like Ford or Reagan got suddenly surges in popularity as a result of it. So my guess would be if that's true, same thing with Trump. We didn't see it after his first attempt. I'll be skeptical for this because we're just so polarized right now. I don't think there's a lot of people's minds to change at this point.
along those lines, what about the debate? Because I don't know if I spoke to you about this. We had a hurricane, and a lot of it's still blurry, speaking of blurry in my mind. But it seemed to me the debate is like one of these old sitcoms where everybody remembers things differently, where, you know, their face gets all fuzzy and everything's like, well, that's not how I remember it. It seems to me like, and I think when you watched, if you're a Harris supporter, if you watched the debate, you thought she cleaned the floor with Trump. If you're a Trump supporter, you thought he cleaned the floor with Harris. So I don't know if anybody's mind changed at all. What do the polls say?
Again, now that we're about 10 days out, it looks like an incredibly small bump, if at all, for Harris. So what do you mean by an incredibly small bump? Maybe a point or so. But again, the polls are all over the map at this point. You know, if you look at over the weekend, what the ABC poll has Harris with a 6-point lead. Some other polls, you know, are closer. Some have Trump with the lead. It's in the national polls. And then the state polls remain exceedingly close at this point, where it doesn't look like there's been any shift whatsoever. So my simple answer would be that it's inconclusive. It does not look like it's moved many people. Going into the debate, again, in the critical 6 swing states, it was suggesting barely 2% of the voters in each of the states were undecided. So we're not looking at many people moving. And for those undecided voters, if they're undecided, what they're telling us is that neither of the candidates spoke to them. That they thought neither of them gave a lot of details, or one was too far to the right, one was too far to the left. And so my guess is again, debate barely moved the needle on anything.
I took some notes watching the Sunday morning shows on Sunday, and I think I got this right, that it was 20,000 votes in 2016 and 80,000 in 2020. Is that right? That made the difference?
It would have been in 2016. It was about 90,000, and four years ago, 2020, 43,000.
So
if you were to
backwards.
Take just to clarify, if you were to move 43,000 votes appropriately across Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin, Trump would have gotten 43,000 more in those three states in the appropriate, you know, the distribution. He would be finishing up his second term as president of the United States. That shows, and in the previous 4 years, it was 90,000. So we're looking at, you know, incredibly small numbers of people in a very few number of states that are going to decide the election. And that becomes the issue. You know, did the poll, is the assassination attempt, is whatever the October surprises are yet to come at this point. And you know there's going to be more. Are they going to move a few thousand people in one state, a few thousand more there? That's what we're looking at this point, such incredibly small numbers of people to move. And it may not even be that they move. They just decide at the end of the day, well, a pox on both houses, I'm not going to vote. I don't really like either of them at this point.
You know what? And we'll talk about that when we come back, David. If that happens, who does that favor? It just seems like if you want to make a visual example of this, it's kind of like you have planes that are just dropping leaflets all over the country, when in fact, all they'd really have to do is drop a bunch of leaflets over a couple of zip codes. Accurate?
That's pretty accurate.
All right, let me take a break. We'll take a short break here for traffic, come back, continue our conversation with David Schultz. We'll talk about celebrity endorsements. I don't know if they really matter because, again, if you're talking about it, and we'll try to narrow it down to how many thousand people we're talking about here to determine the presidential race, and if they decide to sit home, does that benefit one or the other? 621 Traffic Now, WWL.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
All right, 6:25, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, talking about the presidential election and how many thousands of people are actually going to decide this thing. You know, you said in 2016 it was 90,000, 2020, 43,000. We got any idea what kind of numbers we're talking about for 2024, David?
Yeah, I've been saying somewhere around 150,000 to 200,000 voters, and that may be a high estimate, you know. But that's an estimate based upon the belief that there's about six states, you know, that are in play. So think about it: if it was three states in play in 16, mm-hmm. Three states in 2020. It's a guess. You know, we're making a best educated guess. I'm saying 150,000, 200,000 voters across Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, Pennsylvania, maybe North Carolina, you know. But if you think about it, here is that because of the Electoral College winner take all, you know, my state, Minnesota, is not seeing any visits. Your state, I mean, when was the last time in a general election you saw a presidential candidate, you know, tour your state? And so, mm-hmm. so for the most part, you know, in let's say 44, 45 states, the voters are more or less ignored. Yeah, you go vote, because your state's going to vote a particular way, and it matters for lower offices. But an awful lot of people really don't have much of a say in the presidential election.
You know, along those lines, I was thinking about Ohio, and it used to be as Ohio goes, so goes the nation. Yeah. But then they turned pretty red, did they not?
Correct. Absolutely correct.
But with all of this foolishness with the Haitians and the pets and the and I'm not giving credence to any of this. I'm just saying that the fact that this would derail a presidential debate, the fact that you have Republican officials, a Republican governor, Republican mayor of Springfield saying, you know, stop, it's causing them a lot of problems. Is there any way that could backlash on the Republicans and in any way put Ohio up for grabs or not?
Again, I'm still skeptical because, again, we are just so polarized and we're so fixed in our opinions at this point, is that no one seems to be changing their mind. You know, take us back a year ago, September of, 2023. I mean, we were already at the point back then where probably 95%, 96% of the American public had made up their mind. It was pretty easy to predict what the swing states and so forth. We're just, I don't know, the electorate is just so fixed at this point that I don't think you're going to shift very much again. But again, having said that, in a country where it's going to be 150,000, 200,000 voters, you might be able to move some in other states. But Ohio has become so solidly Republican. Again, I would be skeptical that something like this would really shift anything.
I heard about a vice presidential debate yesterday. I think CBS is going to have one. Does that matter or not between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance?
Same thing, probably not at this point. I mean, 40% of the American public can't name who the vice president is, not just this one, but vice presidents in general. There's very little evidence that someone says, gosh, I was going to vote for Trump, but because of Tim Walz, I'm going to shift or vice versa. I mean, it'll be good entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be interesting to watch. But again, incredibly small numbers.
So
of
what is
people,
it?
I think we should.
What does it turn on, David? If you had to predict right now, what does this election turn on?
Mobilization at this point. The issues have been defined by both sides. It's just a question of which side can better get out its people on election day or leading up to it. That's all it is at this point.
And that comes down to money in a lot of ways. Rides of the poll, those
money.
Kind of things.
Exactly. It's all about money.
And early voting, that factors in as well, I guess, right?
Yeah, early voting in Minnesota starts this Friday. Some other states, too. The military, I think, starts to get to vote. Is that 45 days out? So sometime like at the end of the week, you know, military personnel. So the election is literally on top of us now.
Could be something to see. Thank you, David. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon. David Schultz, professor of political science, Hamline University. Jan Moeller joins as we come back. Talk about the state and health care and budget deficit and more. Right now it's time for WWL First News. You know, it's weird. It's 6:44, 16 till 7, and I suddenly got a whiff of perfume, and I don't know where that could have come from, unless we're being visited by the Santé, if you're a three-body problem fan. Jan Moeller joins us now, who is the executive director of Invest in Louisiana, to talk about, it's not a three-body problem, but it's a fiscal problem that Louisiana's facing. How you doing, Jan?
I'm great. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay, sir. Tell me about how'd you fare with Francine? I got to ask.
Well, you know, I'm in Baton Rouge, and we were fine. We were directly in the path as it was coming in, and then it took a jog to the right. So we never lost power. My kids had 2 days off of school. I would say this has probably been their most enjoyable hurricane. I know so many other people weren't that fortunate. How about yourself?
Yeah, did fine. A couple of branches, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's funny, as a kid, you know, you can remember, Jan, being the goofballs that we are as kids, you don't know what you want, and you always hope, and I can remember hoping that hurricanes would come so you'd get a couple of days off of school, not realizing the devastation. But I think Katrina pretty well changed that in the kids' minds. Anyway, let's talk about what the state is facing and what Governor Jeff Landry is asking state health department, the state health department, to do.
Well, the state is facing a fiscal cliff, and that's a term people have probably heard, and they're going to hear a lot more about it. And the fiscal cliff, what that is there's about a little over $500 million in taxes that are rolling off the books on July 1st of 2025, which means if the state does nothing at all, they have to cut the budget. And so, to their credit, the legislature is trying to get out ahead of this, and they're doing something I haven't seen in 21 years, which is they are having hearings on next year's budget in September, 10 months early. You know, the fiscal year just started. Mm-hmm. So they've started, hearing from agencies about what it would look like to cut their budgets. So they've only done a handful of agencies so far, starting with the health department, and they said, the health department said, well, if we have to have a cut of 1 to 5%, these are the programs that would be first to go. And what the legislature heard is that even these cuts would hit programs that serve elderly people, children, people with disabilities, and primarily services that are so-called optional services that allow people to stay in their communities instead of going, for example, to a nursing home. So the state has a lot of home and community service programs where somebody might come to your house for a few hours a day instead, so that you don't have to go into a nursing home and get 24-hour care. Those are the programs that are on the chopping block. What you heard from the legislature is a lot of heartburn. I don't think anybody there, conservative or liberal, wants to start cutting these things. But the legislature is trying to get out ahead of this problem because they know that if they don't do anything at all, there's going to be budget cuts. And there doesn't seem to be a willingness at the legislature, at least not now, to raise the revenue that could get them out of this problem. You know, this is the fiscal cliff the legislature created, and the legislature can avoid this cliff if they're just willing to take some tough votes.
And that would extending the 0.45 cents on every dollar sales tax, would that eliminate that $500 million fiscal cliff?
It would eliminate most of it. The two biggest components of the fiscal cliff is the temporary 0.45 sales tax, and then there's a separate smaller sales tax, 2%, on business utilities. Those are the two major components of the fiscal cliff. So if the legislature wants to avoid these cuts, they can just extend those taxes. There's another tax. This is the vehicle sales taxes that have been going to the state general fund to support general programs. There's a law that is about to take effect where they're going to shift that money over into the transportation trust fund, use it to pay for transportation projects. That's another component of it. But again, the legislature set the table for this way back in 2018, 2019, and now the bill is coming due. And for the most part, these are different legislatures because we've had elections in that time, two sets of elections, of term limits. So this is a whole new group of policymakers that are having to deal with the decisions that were made 6-7 years ago.
So let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. $500 million set to roll off. Governor Landry's asked the state health department to identify $100 million, which is about a fifth of that, obviously. But there would be, I don't know how you would describe it other than a negative synergy that would happen, as I understand it, because that $100 million would turn in a lot more maybe three times plus that because of the loss of federal funds. We'll talk about all of this with John Moeller when we come back. He's the executive director of Invest in Louisiana. And I'll ask you at 504-260-1870. I know somebody responded to Jan's tweet here by said, cut waste in local, state, and federal government. And there is a presumption, I think, that government should run 100% efficiently when private corporations don't run 100% efficiently, or publicly traded corporations. And also there's inflation that has eaten everything up. So I think everybody continues, and I'm no defender of big government, but I think everybody continues to demand more and more out of government while putting in less and less. And I don't see how that can happen. 650, 10 till 7. You can text your thoughts to the Oakmont Jeweler Talk and text line 504-260-1870. Traffic now on WWL. 656, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jan Moeller, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana. So the state government's looking at, as of July 1st, 2025, as it stands now, $500 million of taxes rolling off. That's $500 million. They got to have a balanced budget by the Constitution. That's required in the Constitution. So there are only so many things that can be cut. Along those lines, Jan, I was asking earlier about people expecting total efficiency out of government. They always say that they can cut their way and not extend any taxes. But inflation's also eaten up the cost of services that government's providing, is it not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, every year it costs a little bit more to do the same thing as you did the year before. So there's inflation. Look, I don't think anybody would argue that state government or any other organization that we come in contact with is 100% efficient, but we've tried that. If anybody remembers the Jindal years, that mantra was always, we're going to do more with less. It turned out you did less with less. And we went through years and years of cutting the budget after cutting taxes, and it didn't work out great. You end up cutting a lot of the services and programs that people depend on, and a lot of the investments that we need to make tomorrow's economy as strong as it can be. The economy that we have today, the Louisiana we have today, is a consequence of decisions we made a generation or two ago. And the decisions that we make in the next few months are not just going to reverberate next year, but they're going to have reverberations for years and years to come. We haven't even gotten to education and how education would be affected if the legislature has to cut the budget. And so I'm glad, frankly, that...
But it's a fiscal problem that Louisiana's facing. How are you doing, Jan?
I'm great. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay, sir. Tell me about how'd you fare with Francine? I got to ask.
Well, you know, I'm in Baton Rouge, and we were fine. We were directly in the path as it was coming in, and then it took a jog to the right. So we never lost power. My kids had 2 days off of school. I would say this has probably been their most enjoyable hurricane. I know so many other people weren't that fortunate. Well, how about yourself?
Yeah, did fine, couple of branches, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's funny, as a kid, you know, you can remember, Jan, being the goofballs that we are as kids, you don't know what you want, and you always hope, and I can remember hoping that hurricanes would come so you'd get a couple of days off of school, not realizing the devastation. But I think Katrina pretty well changed that in the kids' minds. Anyway, let's talk about what the state is facing and what Governor Jeff Landry is asking state health department, the state health department, to do.
Well, the state is facing a fiscal cliff, and that's a term people have probably heard, and they're going to hear a lot more about it. And the fiscal cliff, what that is there's about a little over $500 million in taxes that are rolling off the books on July 1st of 2025, which means if the state does nothing at all, they have to cut the budget. And so, to their credit, the legislature is trying to get out ahead of this, and they're doing something I haven't seen in 21 years, which is they are having hearings on next year's budget in September, 10 months early. You know, the fiscal year just started. Mm-hmm. So they've started, hearing from agencies about what it would look like to cut their budget. So they've only done a handful of agencies so far, starting with the health department. And they said, the health department said, well, if we have to have a cut of 1 to 5%, these are the programs that would be first to go. And what the legislature heard is that even these cuts would hit programs that serve elderly people, children, people with disabilities, and primarily services that are so-called optional services that allow people to stay in their communities instead of going, for example, to a nursing home. So the state has a lot of home and community service programs where somebody might come to your house for a few hours a day instead, so that you don't have to go into a nursing home and get 24-hour care. Those are the programs that are on the chopping block. What you heard from the legislature is a lot of heartburn. I don't think anybody there, conservative or liberal, wants to start cutting these things. But the legislature is trying to get out ahead of this problem because they know that if they don't do anything at all, there's going to be budget cuts. And there doesn't seem to be a willingness at the legislature, at least not now, to raise the revenue that could get them out of this problem. You know, this is the fiscal cliff the legislature created, and the legislature can avoid this cliff if they're just willing to take some tough votes.
And that would extending the 0.45 cents on every dollar sales tax, would that eliminate that $500 million fiscal cliff?
It would eliminate most of it. The two biggest components of the fiscal cliff is the temporary 0.45 sales tax, and then there's a separate, smaller sales tax, 2% on business utilities. Those are the two major components of the fiscal cliff. So if the legislature wants to avoid these cuts, they can just extend those taxes. There's another tax. This is the vehicle sales taxes that have been going to the state general fund to support general programs. There's a law that is about to take effect where they're going to shift that money over into the transportation trust fund, use it to pay for transportation projects. That's another component of it. But again, the legislature set the table for this way back in 2018-2019, and now the bill is coming due. And for the most part, these are different legislatures because we've had elections in that time, two sets of elections, of term limits. So this is a whole new group of policymakers that are having to deal with the decisions that were made 6-7 years ago.
So let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. $500 million set to roll off. Governor Landry's asked the state health department to identify $100 million, which is about a fifth of that, obviously. But there would be, I don't know how you would describe it other than a negative synergy that would happen, as I understand it, because that $100 million would turn in a lot more, maybe three times plus that, because of the loss of federal funds. We'll talk about all of this with John Moeller when we come back. He's the executive director of Invest in Louisiana. And I'll ask you at 504-260-1870. I know somebody responded to Jan's tweet here by said cut waste in local, state, and federal government. And there is a presumption, I think, that government should run 100% efficiently when private corporations don't run 100% efficiently, or publicly traded corporations. And also there's inflation that has eaten everything up. So I think everybody continues, and I'm no defender of big government, but I think everybody continues to demand more and more out of government while putting in less and less, and I don't see how that can happen. 650, 10 till 7. You can text your thoughts to the Oakmont Jeweler Talking text line, 504-260-1870. Traffic now on WWL. 656, 4 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jan Moeller, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana. So the state government's looking at, as of July 1st, 2025, as it stands now, $500 million of taxes rolling off. That's $500 million. They got to have a balanced budget by the Constitution. That's required in the Constitution. So there are only so many things that can be cut. Along those lines, Jan, I was asking earlier about people expecting total efficiency out of government. They always say that they can cut their way and not extend any taxes. But inflation's also eaten up the cost of services that government's providing, is it not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, every year it costs a little bit more to do the same thing as you did the year before. So there's inflation. Look, I don't think anybody would argue that state government or any other organization that we come in contact with is 100% efficient, but we've tried that. If anybody remembers the Jindal years, the mantra was always we're going to do more with less. It turned out you did less with less. And we went through years and years of cutting the budget after cutting taxes, and it didn't work out great. You end up cutting a lot of the services and programs that people depend on, and a lot of the investments that we need to make to make tomorrow's economy as strong as it can be. The economy that we have today, the Louisiana we have today, is a consequence of decisions we made a generation or two ago. And the decisions that we make in the next few months are not just going to reverberate next year, but they're going to have reverberations for years and years to come. We haven't even gotten to education and how education would be affected if the legislature has to cut the budget. And so I'm glad, frankly, that the legislature is getting out ahead of this and taking an early look and hearing from agencies on what this would look like. But I think the one thing everybody in Baton Rouge can agree on is doing nothing is probably not an option. The question is what to do. And so far, and that gets to the tax side. And actually, there's an important hearing coming up tomorrow where the tax committees in the House and Senate are going to meet and start talking about what they want to do. You know, Jeff Landry is laying out a pretty aggressive tax cut proposal, tax reform proposal, but we haven't seen yet how that would affect the budget picture at all, whether he wants to cut taxes, whether there are taxes he wants to raise to make up the difference. So our concern is that the fiscal cliff be addressed and not be made any worse by additional tax cuts, because then we could be looking at even deeper cuts to the budget.
And I called it negative synergy. We only have 20 seconds here left, but if you cut $100 million from the health, that could lead to $330 million total because of the loss of federal funds, correct?
That's absolutely right, yeah. So we're looking at programs that serve real people in real need, and those are the programs that are often the first to get cut, and we're hoping that the legislature can avoid that.
Thank you, Jan. Appreciate your time. I know I was one of those people that, you know, always thought about 100% government efficiency and everything else, and I kind of looked around and said, wait a minute, there's not an entity in the world that's 100% efficient, so why should you expect that of government? 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Jan Moeller, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana. So the state government's looking at, as of July 1st, 2025, as it stands now, $500 million of taxes rolling off. That's $500 million. They got to have a balanced budget by the Constitution. That's required in the Constitution. So there are only so many things that can be cut. Along those lines, Jan, I was asking earlier about people expecting total efficiency out of government. They always say that they can cut their way and not extend any taxes. But inflation's also eating up the cost of services that government's providing, is it not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, every year it costs a little bit more to do the same thing as you did the year before. So there's inflation. Look, I don't think anybody would argue that state government or any other organization that we come in contact with is 100% efficient, but we've tried that. If anybody remembers the Jindal years, the mantra was always we're going to do more with less. It turned out you did less with less. And we went through years and years of cutting the budget after cutting taxes, and it didn't work out great. You end up cutting a lot of the services and programs that people depend on, and a lot of the investments that we need to make tomorrow's economy as strong as it can be. The economy that we have today, the Louisiana we have today, is a consequence of decisions we made a generation or two ago. And the decisions that we make in the next few months are not just going to reverberate next year, but they're going to have reverberations for years and years to come. We haven't even gotten to education and how education would be affected if the legislature has to cut the budget. And so I'm glad, frankly, that the legislature is getting out ahead of this and taking an early look and hearing from agencies on what this would look like. But I think the one thing everybody in Baton Rouge can agree on is doing nothing is probably not an option. The question is what to do. And so far, and that gets to the tax side. And actually, there's an important hearing coming up tomorrow where the tax committees and the House and Senate are going to meet and start talking about what they want to do. You know, Jeff Landry is laying out a pretty aggressive tax cut proposal, tax reform proposal, but we haven't seen yet how that would affect the budget picture at all, whether he wants to cut taxes, whether there are taxes he wants to raise to make up the difference. So our concern is that the fiscal cliff be addressed and not be made any worse by additional tax cuts, because then we could be looking at even deeper cuts to the budget.
And I called it negative synergy. We only have 20 seconds here left, but if you cut $100 million from the health, that could lead to $330 million total because of the loss of federal funds, correct?
That's absolutely right, yeah. So we're looking at programs that serve real people in real need, and those are the programs that are often the first to get cut, and we're hoping that the legislature can avoid that.
Thank you, Jan. Appreciate your time. I know I was one of those people that, you know, always thought about 100% government efficiency and everything else. Then I kind of looked around and said, wait a minute. There's not an entity in the world that's 100% efficient, so why should you expect that of government?
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.